Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to this very special edition of Atlanta Business Radio. This is Stone Payton. I am your producer, and our host today from CTO Nation is CEO Greg Corey. Welcome to the studio, man.
Thanks, Stone, and thanks for everybody joining in to tune in for the show today. CTO Nation provides part-time technology leadership for small businesses, and part of that means helping businesses figure out how to have successful technology projects. So we have a great group of guests today. They're going to help us figure out how they've done that. The first two guests today are Rolf Versluis, the Chief Technology Officer of AdCap Network Systems, and Stephen Ferguson, the Director of Technology from Technical College System of Georgia. They're an AdCap Network Systems client. Welcome, guys, to the show. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Greg. Great to be here.
Yep. Thanks, Greg.
Well, Rolf, let's get started with you first. Tell us a little bit about AdCap Network Systems and the type of organizations that you all serve.
Sure. AdCap Network Systems is an information technology solution provider, which is kind of a mouthful, but what we do is we work with our customers, which are folks that tend to have between 200 and a few thousand users that need data networks, wireless networks, servers and storage with applications to run on them. Everybody needs applications to run their businesses, and phone systems. So the big phone system that we focus on is from Cisco Systems, and some people might know them as a voice over IP system or seen the handsets on Office Space or things like that. And so we put together full solutions. We go see what folks have. We have our engineers design them. We work with our customers for the customization. We project manage it, roll it out, and then support it. Our relationship with the Technical College System of Georgia is special because they have a lot of capabilities and a lot of requirements. And so I'm really happy to be here with Steve today to talk about it.
Good, good. So what are some of your most active product lines? The voice over IP, one of the primary ones?
Yeah, so everybody needs to be able to communicate, and it's gone through a number of different names over the years, a voice over IP phone system. These days, people tend to call it a unified communication and collaboration system. But just think of, you got your phones in your office, but then you've also got chat and presence on your computer and your handheld device, contact center for calling in. So at technical colleges, there'd be student services like a registrar office or things like that where you have a bunch of calls coming into the same number, and it all runs over the data network. And so the data network has to be secure. It has to be optimized for voice. It has to have the right amount of bandwidth in all sorts of different locations. And if there's ever a problem, we need to be able to troubleshoot it and then fix it and get things going. Because if you're not making phone calls and talking to people, then it's sometimes hard to get your business done.
And what are some changes you see coming in a lot of that technology over the next year or two?
Well, in the next year or two, I'm not sure there's going to be a lot of changes. There's from phone systems, it's all about how the changes are implemented. So right now, we could, for example, have the entire Cisco phone as an app on your mobile device, on iPhone or on an Android, and that app can be your entire communication securely back to your network and to the rest of the phones. But a lot of people still have the basic phone. So I see the changes being just the further integration of that. 5 to 10 years in the future, gosh, it might change completely. Who knows what Google might do?
It's true. So with all the stuff we see in the news about cybersecurity and liability and insurance and things like that, how does that affect some of the work you all do on phone systems and other parts of the network?
That affects it in a big way, because if you're going to put all your communications, your data, your applications, your phone, your video all over one network, you want to make sure that that network's secure. So from the very get-go, our design engineers, they have a lot of experience, they have a lot of certifications, they're always staying up to date on things. They work closely with our customers, some of them who, most of them actually, who understand that security is very important to design in from the get-go, and just make sure it's designed in. So we had one customer, for example, where we completely carve out voice on a separate virtual network from the rest of their data. And they were having a problem with one of their servers where they couldn't log on. And the customer called and said, our network's down. We need you to get in here and fix it. I'm like, well, you're calling me from your office phone, and that's running on the network. I'm like, I can tell you your whole network's not down. Part of it might be down, but the network doesn't just go down. So security's definitely very important. So is reliability, and so is performance. You certainly don't want choppy voice. And one of the things that we love to do is that after we put a phone system in, as long as all the quality of service which is prioritizing voice over the rest of the traffic, is set up well, a voice over IP business phone system is going to sound better than a traditional phone system. And it's nice when customers recognize that.
Well, through our business at CTO Nation, we talk to a lot of C-levels, and everybody complains about failed technology projects. You know, it seems like one after the next, you never hear about a successful project. So what are a couple of tips from you across your client base, things that you make sure you do with every client to make sure the project is successful?
Well, part of it is set the expectation that things aren't going to be perfect, that there are going to be problems. But as long
good luck with that.
But as long as the intentions and the plans are there, but we try to focus on doing a very few things, but doing those things very well. We've done hundreds of voice system upgrades for customers, for example, and network upgrades for customers. But it certainly helps to plan ahead up front and set what the expectations are and make suggestions and make recommendations what other people have found useful to do. And that way the customer works that into their project expectations.
Absolutely.
It's certainly important to have good project managers who are very good at coordinating the different elements. But from our side, having good design, good project manager, and good engineers, it's just as important on the customer side that they have people that are able to get the information, that are able to talk about what they need, and are able to provide us information. I'll give you another short example. We had a customer where we're putting their phone system in, and I'm like, great, what do you want to have happen when the receptionist is too busy to answer the phone? I was like, receptionist is always going to answer the phone. I'm like, all right, what do you want to have happen after hours when someone calls? He's like, well, I just wanted to go to voicemail. Okay, great. So just voicemail and record it. He's like, no, I want them to have a selection of five different departments that they can go to and different things that they can choose and after-hour support. I'm like, okay, well, let's talk through that a little bit more. Yep. So this is a big change for a lot of people because a lot of folks have often had a phone system in place for 20 years and they don't have to think about how they actually use it. So the first thing is to say, well, we can do everything that you're doing now, and then let's talk about some of the other things that we can do as well.
And how do you all address training?
So training's a really important part of it. So there's, for when you put new complex systems in, they add lots of different capabilities, which is great, but they also add complexity. So in some cases, we'll resell training from training partners whose training is specialized just to get people up to speed on all the new technologies. For everything that we put in place, we have what we call administrative level turnover. So we do documentation of what we've done and kind of give a runbook to the customer and go over to make sure that they know how to work through it. But even more important is end-user training, because a lot of cases, people, if you're talking about a phone system, they design their processes around how to use that phone system. So we try to work with the customer and say, okay, we have a whole bunch of different features to roll out. What features do you want to roll out first that we train on, and what do you want to say for a second stage, and how do you want to do the training? Sometimes we'll do online training where they can go do it interactively. Sometimes we'll have big classrooms full of people. So it just depends, but training is really important to the success of a project rollout.
I'd love to know the success of the transfer button across large organizations. How many people actually can accurately transfer a call? So that's always
or do conference calls.
Yeah, scary stuff, right?
Yeah, juggle two calls at once. I'm not so good at that even. That's more of a mental block. But
well, Ralph, that's all great information. We appreciate all that. So, Stephen, let's shift to you a little bit and tell us a little bit about Technology College System of Georgia.
Yep, so Technical College System of Georgia, TCSG. We're a system of 23 technical colleges. We have locations all around the state. That includes adult ed sites. We have GED as part of our system. We also have Georgia Quick Start as part of our system.
Okay.
Throughout the agency, we have 12 to 13,000 employees. At any given time, 150,000 students. We have around 60,000 network devices, under roof, under the building.
That's
and that does not include, all the BYOD type stuff that people bring in. So a student walks in with iPhones, iPads, laptops, and those type of things in some areas. So there's a lot of technology going on. And a lot of problems to solve, and a lot of problems exist that just need to go identify and find a solution for.
And so are there 23 campuses across the state?
There's 23 colleges, 23 technical colleges. There are actually about 150 technical college campus locations across the state.
Wow.
When you factor in adult ed sites and learning centers, that can go over 200.
And so do you all provide support for the faculty off-site as well?
We do. So we have an online wing as well. So we have the GVTC, Georgia Virtual Technical Connection. They actually service online students. So a lot of our students and a lot of our population and instructors have an on-campus component as well as an online component to their education.
Okay. And what was the student population, 150,000?
Roughly 150,000. It changes a little bit depending on the month and semester, but yeah, roughly 150,000.
So there's obviously a lot of technology to support that size of an organization. What's your IT department look like?
So the IT department's somewhat dispersed. We have the system office staff. So what we do there is we have an engineering team. We have support staff and help desk for the system office. We also have a student information support team. We have a data team that's separate from IT that does a lot of the data aggregation and reporting side. In the colleges, we have an IT department there as well. So you have an IT director and you have various staff depending on the size of the college and campus. So a lot of times we have engineering and help desk staff there. Our role at the system office is to roll out those major projects, support them, and identify areas where they need assistance, and then also be there for what we call our level three or tier three support, so that when they have an issue, when your IT director has an issue on campus, we're who they call first.
So you're providing strategy for all the campuses and facilities, vendor selection, and things like that?
Yes.
How many projects are you dealing with on an annual basis?
On an annual basis, it's upwards of 100. 100, 120 various different projects, because we have new buildings, new campuses going in, new technology to roll out. You have upgrades, at 3 or 4 or 10 different colleges, simultaneously going on. It's a good bit to juggle, but it's a lot of fun.
The long list of vendors then you're probably managing.
It is, yes. Yeah.
So talk about some of the products you're using that ADCAP provides.
Yeah, so we've worked with ADCAP for a number of years now. We've collaborated with them on data center and voice applications. One of the big things we've done recently was Cisco Unified Communications. That's where we really got our start with ADCAP. We came to them for one of our first projects. It was Savannah Tech, actually, and worked with one of, I think now is our VP of engineering. At the time, he was one of the deployment engineers. Worked with him on that first project for us, and that was really a hand-in-hand approach. We shadowed each other. We kicked ideas around. We went in and interviewed the college and the stakeholders there, found out what needed to be done, and that set the standard for the rest of the agency. Today, we have voice over IP and unified communications in 19 out of 23 colleges. That's expanding to all 23, pretty quickly. Yeah, it is. It's pretty huge. That's going to be, upwards of 11,000 devices on unified communications. And we worked with the ADCAP team to help set those standards and get it all done. So we roll it out in a seamless manner. We can take advantage of the economies of scale doing it over and over again, but also that standardization is important for supportability for us.
Sure. Well, so let's talk to both of you guys now. And it sounds like with the unified communication product, let's take a project around that. Maybe if it's a new facility you bring it up, or let's pick one of those and talk through the implementation from, you have the needs, you see, okay, we need to upgrade this facility, and then let's talk through how you made that project successful.
Yeah, let's talk about that. So, one of the things that we've looked at in the past is, or one of the things that ADCAP's worked with us a lot on is call centers. So, customer service is obviously a big deal. If you don't answer the phone, you're not talking to the customers. If you don't have a mechanism in place to answer the phone, you're not talking to the customers. Traditional telephony has solutions for call centers. Voice RIP has solutions. Unified Communications has a solution. What we're seeing with traditional telephony, they can't deliver is it's a cost add-on. It's another feature. It's another item. With Unified Communications, we can come in and have a cost savings. We can have a pretty quick return, a pretty quick payback on the project, and then a long-term ROI, not only tangible in dollar cost savings, but also those intangibles of getting increased functionality, giving them tools they could not have had with traditional telephony. Traditional telephony is dial tone. You pick up the phone, it works. Phones work all the time, but voice over IP, you pick up the phone, it works, it does video, it does other integrations, it has unified voicemail, there's lots and lots of other features, as Rolf talked about earlier, it's that rollout of those features, that's where you really get that return on investment, you get the payback, you get advanced options you just can't get anywhere else.
Absolutely. Well, and so obviously requirements definition is the key to any project in the beginning. How do you go about defining the requirements for a particular project?
So most of the projects are driven based on the college. So the first thing is to go in and actually do an evaluation of the network, because we don't know what they can support. They come to us and say, hey, we want a call center. Okay, well, let's take a look at voice over IP. Let's see what your monthly phone bills are today. Let's take a look at your network. Are we going to do some network infrastructure augmentation, because it does require bandwidth. It requires voice. It requires QoS. It requires power over Ethernet. There's lots of options there. So we need to do that network evaluation, find out and talk to the key stakeholders, find out what they want from the system. So a big part of getting it right is listening. Listening to the customer, listening to the stakeholders, find out what they want to accomplish, and then get all the data necessary, all the details necessary to accomplish that. Write it all down. Put it in a workbook and get it ready.
So then, Rolf, when you get the requirements, what's your first step? What does your team do?
So you'd asked earlier, what kind of things that are changing. There's nothing huge that's changing in the industry, but there's always incremental changes. So, for example, one of the things that that Steve has gone through and done on the architecture for the technical college systems is video calls. So the integration of video into lots of different things. And they're pretty self-sufficient on the designs based upon the technical requirements. It's some of the more detailed type work, like the call center scripting that we do, that we end up having to, based on the requirements. Requirements are one thing, but then sitting down and talking with a customer and talking through all the various details and really building it out into the information so that we can have a script. And then once we have a call center script that we create, and this is where people call in and they hear a specific something and it goes to a group of people, and then what happens after a few minutes and what kind of reporting do they want. So just like anything else, it gets pretty detailed. And we find that the initial requirements document is a starting point, and then the discussions and the expectation settings, and then talking about maybe what other folks of similar size or similar organizations do spark ideas that can then go on and have further types of things. And then our engineers stay up to date with all the latest equipment and the latest types of changes, and so we work hand in hand to specify, okay, what's the actual equipment list that's going to be required to do this? Then we go through and talk about, well, what's the scope of work required to implement this, and what are we going to set as measurements for success at the end? How are we going to say, okay, we're done, it's happy, we've met our metrics, and we've done everything that we said that we're going to do? So we put all that stuff down, and work together on it.
I want to add something into that as well. So when we take a look at those requirement documents, he's right. We do a lot of the engineering in-house. We come to them for specialized projects. We also come to them and bounce ideas off. So one of the things we've done is, as Cisco a few years back moved from the standalone server boxes to the virtualization platform, we talked with ADCAP, and they actually brought to us the data center infrastructure, what they now call FlexPod. It's a NetApp and Cisco UCS Unified Communication or Unified Computing System. And what we did there is we take a look at now approaching a voice project and say, hey, wait a second, this can be a voice and data center project. We're going to spend money on server resources to bring in this voice project. Why don't you spend that money on something that you can also leverage to run the rest of your network? And that's where collaborating, you know, with ADCAP has been very beneficial. They were able to initially bring us out a try and buy demo for that product, no money out of pocket, bring it in, set it up, see if you want to use it. And guess what? We liked it. And we've bought a bunch of them, and we keep rolling them out in colleges. So now projects that before were simply voice or unified communications have turned into multiple levels of projects. So it's really an overhaul of the way the college services itself and services to students and services to faculty and staff.
So there's always some unpredictable things about a project, and capacity planning and things like that have always have to be hard for wireless networks and things like that. So how do you all go about that? We've all been in a coffee shop and wanted to get on the Wi-Fi to do some work, and you can't. Same thing with some schools. So how do you all address that issue in capacity planning?
Capacity planning, it really depends on the site. So, you know, if you're in a large area for South County, Atlanta, you know, Marietta, those areas where you have, you know, student populations that are larger than, you know, some of the smaller counties and smaller sites, obviously you kind of know enrollment's going to be, what the enrollment projected growth is. We can go talk to the registrar, we can go talk to the institutional effectiveness team and find out how many people are expecting here. You build out a conference center, you kind of know what it's going to look like. When we build networks, we overbuild them. We build them for growth. Our, you know, replacement cycle sometimes 5 to 8 years. So we build it on an idea that this site's going to grow to this level in the next 5 to 8 years, and we're going to have this many more devices on the network. We look at things like 802.11ac on the wireless side and say, hey, this is going to, you know, people could be walking in here with higher speed devices. We need to support that. You know, if we got a conference coming up, you're going to have 200 or 300 or 500 of those devices come in. Do we have enough bandwidth to handle that? So it really is a per-site basis to do capacity planning. Things like voice over IP we've been planning for 10 years. We've been putting PoE in place because that prepares you for the wireless, you know, projects. You're not having to do local access point, you know, power. When you go put the phones, the video endpoints in that are...
The video is making a big difference, right? Because video uses so much more bandwidth than voice. And the interesting thing is when you set the priority on the network, you give voice the highest priority because if there's a video call, there's a voice component and a video component. Sometimes you can accept a little bit of stutter or jitter in the video, but you can't accept that on the voice. So that's the next stage that we're all architecting for. And that includes both the bandwidth internally to the organization on the campus, which is fiber links between buildings and things like that, and then rented circuits between the buildings. And that's where you have to get, you know, video compression and all sorts of different things like that. But video is going to be one of those things that, depending on how the usage goes, could possibly stress and cause additional changes that have to be made down the line.
Well, that's a great transition into the two next topics, which are how far out on the roadmap are you planning? How far does your strategy plan take you? And business continuity, those things do kind of work together as you're planning and you're considering business continuity issues.
So, you know, the strategy for IT, we really look at a five-year plan, but actionable is 12 to 18 months because we don't know what's going to look like in 5 years. As Rolf said earlier, you don't know what Google's going to do. You don't know what the next big thing's going to do. So 12 to 18 months is really the big focus, you know, with a focus on 5 years of where you want to be, and that gets modified year to year. So the way we look at those plans is, what are the hot technologies now? What are the technologies that we already have in place? And what are the standards we're trying to reach? Because it really is driven off of, those plans are driven off of what the students need. What is the next big thing in instruction? What do we need to develop, for the workforce industry? Those are the things that we have to be planning for. Are they going to bring in a big med tech lab into this college? So what is that going to do to the college's plan?
Are they keeping you abreast of business plans for the growth
of the college?
We do.
Yeah, we make it our business to kind of know what's going on everywhere and try to stay in touch, with every individual college, get feedback from them saying, hey, I've got a new building coming up. It's going to be ready in 2016, 2017. What do we need to do? So that's going into our master planning to say, hey, look, this is on the list. We know it's coming. Let's go ahead and start working with the vendors. Drawings may or may not have been done yet. Let's work with the vendors and go ahead and get a plan of how many port counts, what kind of technology, and then figure out, what's the standard going to be for technology at that time. And sometimes that's a guessing game. Really is. Business continuity, we do a lot with the cloud. We also do a lot in-house with our private cloud. The FlexPod infrastructure I was talking about earlier has made business continuity a lot easier. Virtualized platforms are a whole lot easier to replicate across. We can replicate across our WAN. We have similar systems set up at other college campuses. We back up for each other. And then where we can't, we do cloud backups. We use the cloud infrastructure.
Good planning. Any other information? I think we're... you guys have provided us a lot of good information so far. So.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to add on to what Steve talked about for the private cloud. That's actually a big change for being able to address additional growth as well as to address the business continuity. Because once you take, instead of having, in the past, people would have for an application that they would need to run, whether it's a customer relationship management or a grades application or something like that, they'd have a separate physical server for it. With a private cloud architecture that TCSG has put in place, it gives them a lot more flexibility and reliability. So through running virtual servers on the hardware with the storage, they're able to expand and contract as they need, as well as to take all the information that's stored and replicate it to another physical site. So if God forbid, there's a tornado that goes through one of the technical college's data centers, they'll have replicated all that information somewhere else as part of their business continuity and disaster recovery strategy. So,
there's testing going along to make sure it's all
yes,
reliable then.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, thanks for your time. What's the best way for listeners to reach out to you if they want to learn more about ADCAP Network Systems?
So, one of the best places to go is certainly our website, adcapnet.com. We've got a number of salespeople that have worked with us for many years that are experienced in talking through customer requirements and talking about the different solutions that we do for people, and we'd love to hear from y'all.
And Stephen, what about Technical College?
Yep, www.tcsg.edu is the best place to find information, and we're 23 technical colleges around the state. You can find us everywhere.
Great. Well, thanks for the information. Really, really good stuff, guys.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, so our next two guests on CTO Nation Radio, Brett Sheely, Director of Client Engagement from FRM Solutions, and Jamie Shira, Executive VP of Corporate Operations and Franchise Development from Vitaflow. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So, Brett, we're going to start with you first. Tell us a little bit about FRM Solutions and the market you serve.
Sure. FRM Solutions, we are a Microsoft Dynamics-based CRM company that specializes in franchise sales. So, basically anything to do with a candidate that inquires about a brand, full life cycle of that candidate all the way through store opening, royalty reporting, the overall management of not only the recruitment process, but also as that franchisee comes on board to your brand, taking him through that whole process and being able to keep up with it.
And so you all can work with startup franchise concepts all the way through very mature brands with many units?
Absolutely, yep. We work with either or, startups all the way through to giant companies like Napa Auto Parts or Brewster's Ice Cream, companies like that.
And how do you all size your project then, or your product implementation, based on the type of client?
You know, really, it comes down to what modules they're looking at with FRM. So, you know, smaller brands usually will come on with maybe just recruitment and a FIM module, which is a franchise information module. Whereas larger companies obviously are going to have lots more data. So that's really the biggest difference, is managing, getting old data into a new database.
And so what are some of the things, when you approach a new client, you're onboarding them, what are some of the keys of success for your projects?
Organization. It's a huge deal to most companies, especially larger brands, and that's what keeps them usually on the platform that they may be unhappy with, is they dread the change. And so managing that for them, letting them know, hey, we've done this a million times, laying it out so that they can see that, hey, we're going to do this in bite-sized pieces, that's really the key.
And what about when they're not really sure what they need? They know they need the system, they know that you can deliver, but they don't know the questions to ask to even get started.
Yeah, you know, what's great about FRM is, you know, just about everybody that works for us has some kind of franchising experience on the other side of the fence, on their side of the fence. So, you know, we really know exactly what they've gone through because we've done that job. Not everybody, but the vast majority of people that work with us, that, you know, we've been on both sides. So,
all right, well, good information. So, Jamie, tell us a little bit about VitaFlow.
So VitaFlow is a new IV hydration concept out of Atlanta. We provide intravenous hydration for several reasons, whether you're, you know, an athlete or you are, you know, sick, pregnant women have morning sickness, they come in. We offer fluids, B12, B-complex, Toradol, and then a myriad of vitamins as well. Currently have two locations now, and we are in the process of franchising and have brought the services from Brett and his team at FRM on to help us do that.
And so what are the type of facilities would people find you in?
So we have standalone stores currently, two locations, one in on Peachtree near Midtown and one up in town, Brookhaven.
And the typical franchisee prospect you're looking for, who's a typical business owner for you?
Someone with retail management experience. You know, the medical side of the business, we separate that from the retail side of the business as much as possible, because those are two totally separate subjects and they have their own rules and regulations. We have a medical director who is an MD here in town, and he handles all the medical side of the business. And on the business side, it really is a customer service driven business, just like any other retail business.
And so how are you all trying to find franchise prospects? How are you all marketing the concept?
Actually, we haven't started marketing and advertising yet. It's been simply word of mouth growth, and it's been really, really encouraging to see the, you know, 150 plus inquiries we've had over the last couple of months. Simply, we have a franchise link, which is, you know, one of the last tabs on the last page of our website, and people are somehow drilling down to find that. They fill out a short application, it pops them into the FRM software, and I get a notification on all of my devices at one time, and we go through the process.
I'm confused. I thought the reason that Rolf and Steven were here is because we were going to sell them a franchise.
Well, that's what I thought too, but these questions aren't really leading me towards that.
So, there's a lot of thirsty network engineers out there. Yeah. We need to hydrate them.
I spent Christmas morning in the emergency room with my oldest, and the solution was she was dehydrated. Mm-hmm. Can you get that done at one of these sites, or does it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you get that done on site?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hydration.
Yeah, so we have you know, Georgia registered medical professionals in each facility 7 days a week, and it's actually funny that you say that. A lot of the problems people have and reasons why they go to, you know, a hospital or you know, an ER where they sit and wait, you know, countless hours and spend thousands of dollars, mm-hmm. they can just come to us. We don't diagnose any diseases. We don't treat any diseases. We simply provide hydration. But a lot of that reason that you do go to those facilities is because you are dehydrated, and it's definitely way more cost effective to come to us.
I wish I'd have met you in early December. That's where I was Christmas morning.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then I got the bill like a few days ago.
Yeah, we have a Yeah, that was a surprise, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, well, I could probably buy one of the franchises.
Probably so, but we have a ton of people that come in, you know, specifically for dehydration. Lots of athletes, personal trainers throughout town. You know, it's a 30-minute process. You come in, you sit down in a nice recliner. You've got a, you know, big screen TV in front of you with a remote control. You can get coffee, tea, beverages, and it's a pretty relaxing spa-like environment.
All right, so obviously with the franchise business, you have kind of two businesses you're dealing with, growing the brand as a franchise and then also operating each individual unit. So there's different technology you need in different parts of the organization. You know, as you look to grow the business, you know, how do you make decisions on we need some technology in these areas?
It's really all about you looking at the cost-benefit analysis of bringing someone on versus software. And in, you know, 90% of the cases, software is going to be an answer to a problem that you have. I mean, most small businesses use some sort of software, whether it's QuickBooks or on up to, you know, a franchise relationship or other CRM software that allows you to stay in contact and get to really know your customer. So
certainly. Yeah. Well, and so what were some of the initial things that said, okay, we want to find a vendor, we want to start in this areas of the technology and things you found in FRM solutions that you liked?
I would say the first time that we realized we were going to need some help was when we, you know, really got into the depths of building out our franchise disclosure document and noticing pretty quickly, pretty much the first conversation we had, that there were tons of legal pieces you have to follow, trying to keep people, you know, in line with the brand, collecting royalties, et cetera, and all of these are modules that, you know, we were looking initially just for CRM software. I've worked with another, you know, probably the largest CRM software in the country, and great software, but it didn't satisfy some of the needs that we needed on franchise specific, such as, you know, when you receive a franchise disclosure document, you've got to sign it and return it, and that trail has to be, you know, documented, and there has to be a 2-week period, and, you know, there's all these requirements around, you know, when you can actually talk with someone, and we realized pretty quickly, you know, that we didn't want to grow this huge internal company. We wanted to run lean, and we realized that, you know, we need someone or something to take those places, and their software, you know, was it. It was fortunate because I think we had one conversation. We came in for a demo, and you know, Keith, my business partner, and I looked at each other and said, "Yeah, this is exactly what we need."
So, Brad, this is a case where you all are certainly providing more than just technology. It's, you know, this is a startup brand, and you all have a lot of experience in franchising. So, you know, they're looking to you all as a domain expert on this sort of thing. So how did you all approach that project? It wasn't just about the technology implementation, but giving them some good guidance in the industry.
Exactly. That you know, another thing that really sets FRM apart is the fact that, you know, our president, Stan Friedman, you know, has been in franchising for 25 years. He loves working with emerging brands and passing on the knowledge that he's gained over those years to really help them navigate the pitfalls and let them know, hey, you know, you might want to look at it this way or this way. And I think, you know, Jamie and Keith appreciate that. There's not a lot of other companies like ours that have that kind of help. You know, most other companies like ours, you know, they're guys that are strictly technology guys. So we try to blend that and make it an easier transition for especially a younger brand.
Yeah, I'll second that. I mean, we've absolutely used them as a sounding board for just ideas. And, you know, hey, we've got this issue. You've got this solution for it. You know, how does that process look for you guys from both sides? And they know both sides, and that was really the main reason why, you know, we went with FRM.
Well, and it can be daunting when you look at a big solution that has a lot of pieces to it, a lot of moving parts. You know, where do we start? And that can a lot of times scare away a client or a customer from even starting because I don't know where to start. So how did you all approach that? Obviously, the development side was the first module maybe.
Yeah, there's always a needs analysis that we go through, and we look at what they're using now, if anything. So that's always the first step is what are you using now? What don't you like about it? And what kind of solution can we provide for you? And what's the right way to provide that solution? That's really the key there. So it always starts there. Then we go through the demo process. We, you know, once they decide to sign, and however many modules they decide to go through, we have a kickoff call, and we lay out the implementation plan for them piece by piece, you know, over a certain number of weeks that we determine how long it's going to take. Everything is laid out for them. They get to take that with them and kind of follow along, and that way it kind of is a checks and balances system, so they know exactly what they're responsible for and what we're responsible for. So organization, that's the key.
And how do you all keep on track timeline-wise? That's always one of the things, you know, as a vendor, you're kind of waiting on the client to get you deliverables, to get content together, things like that. I see Jamie smiling, so maybe there was some of that in this project.
No, actually, it was really seamless. Like I said, I had done some work with, you know, some of these larger technology companies in the past, and they, you know, dump this, you know, software in your plate, and they say, all right, there you go.
Have at it.
Go. We have 24-hour customer service. And it's like, okay, so, you know, if day one, you're constantly trying to figure out, you know, everything you're supposed to do from the beginning. With FRM, they sent us basically, you know, two documents that had, you know, the information they needed from us and then the information that we needed from them from the get-go. It had a timeline, basically a project management timeline. And, you know, they said, you know, the only reason why there was any hiccups was because we were slow in getting them information, which is, you know, surprising. It's usually, you know, the other way. And we followed that process, and it was absolutely pain-free. Anytime we need to make any changes, it's just been a quick email or phone call, and we haven't had any problems thus far.
So, Brett, how do you all approach training and then user adoption and making sure that stays through the life of the project?
Well, it's unique to every client, but as a general rule, we always start off with, if they have multiple modules, we'll identify the, you know, power user, so to speak, for that module, and we kind of what we try to use is the train the trainer approach. So that's kind of what we recommend. Not everything goes that way. Sometimes smaller brands like VitaFlow, you know, Jamie's wearing six or seven different hats, so he's the power user for everything. So it makes it a little bit easier, less people to train. But on a bigger scale, you know, we train that power user. We also have, you know, basic user training per module for each you know, division of the company. From there, once we go live, we allow them to use the software maybe a week to 2 weeks, and then we circle back and answer all the questions that they have.
Sure.
So that's kind of how we plan it out. It doesn't always go that way, but that's what we found is the most successful way.
And how about ongoing training, you know, as they start adding staff, getting the new staff trained? Because that's always the 6 months after implementation or a year after, you know, there's been half the staff turned over and the new people haven't been trained and they're back on Excel. And how do you all avoid that sort of thing?
Well, we have a really good knowledge base that's built right into the product. The other thing that they can do is we have what's called premier support hours. So if they have turnover and they need to, you know, train a couple new people, they can buy those premier support hours in blocks at a discounted rate, or they can just, you know, buy them as they need them, you know, 1 hour, 2 hours at a time. And we'll, you know, usually it only takes about one or two sessions to train a new person, depending on their role that they have. So, you know, we're always adding to the knowledge base. It's a pretty robust knowledge base, and they can pretty much find anything they need right from in there.
So, Jamie, as you all implemented this internally and you've got now your development process kind of built around their technology, what do you all see as the next logical modules that you all might be implementing?
Yeah, currently we only use the sales module, and it's funny you ask. I actually sent me an email about that earlier this week, you know, basically looking at, you know, I need a presentation on all of these to see, you know, where we want to move. We think that, you know, the store opener module will be the second one, you know, when we get some store building in the works. It basically has, you know, a timeline for events, project management, and they all correlate or contingent upon, you know, completing one before the next one, and it automatically adjusts that timeline with that. The area representative module is also one that we will use pretty much, you know, in the next couple of weeks, considering that's the approach that we're using going into franchising. And then the royalties collection. Obviously, compliance and royalties collection are two of your biggest issues when you're, you know, you face with your franchisees.
Sure.
And being able to have a system that everyone's already on, and it, you know, has these modules built in that control all these pieces to your business is hugely beneficial and scalable, which is, you know, exactly what you're looking into when you want to sign up a new piece.
Does the platform include an area for operations, documents, and training the franchisees and that tracking all that?
Yeah, if you want to name all the ones there, I think there's, you know.
Yeah, there's quite a few.
30 seconds, go.
Yeah, we offer an intranet, so a franchisee intranet where clients can put, you know, anything from, you know, training materials to operations manuals to we can set up ordering if they order product from corporate through there, anything and everything. It's all SharePoint-based, so it's pretty easy to work with. So really the sky's the limit when it comes to what we can offer from an internet perspective for their franchisees.
And what's available on mobile?
Mobile is, you know, we've done quite a bit with mobile. We're getting, you know, right now our platform is responsively designed, so it'll kind of format to whatever device you're coming to it from. We are working on other things such as apps and things like that, but for right now it's just responsive design.
Okay.
Which is hugely important.
And so how do you all approach integration, things like that? So does that point-of-sale system, does it include that?
We can, yeah. We can integrate with, you know, anybody that's got an open API we can integrate with. Jamie's not doing that right now. That might be something in the future they look at where we can actually pull data from their POS, such as sales and things like that. It kind of goes along with the royalty reporting. So yeah, we do offer that. It is, you know, it's a standalone module itself. So it's usually a bigger project because you know, especially if you're a larger brand, you may have four or five different POS systems.
Different facilities.
Absolutely.
So how many touch points are there on an ongoing basis now, monthly? How often do you all communicate in terms of supporting them? Not end user support necessarily, but training and just touching base. And is everything working well for you?
Yeah, well, you know, we start off with, we always schedule a weekly call right when we kick off. So no matter what, we're gonna speak once a week. Typically, especially during the initial stages of implementation, you're gonna have multiple calls a week, which is fine. But there's one that's scheduled. So, you know, there'll be times where, you know, Jamie might reach out to me and say, hey, you know, what did you mean when you said you needed this or that? Or, you know, we're still finishing up this. And same thing, he'll come back to me and say, hey, where are you on getting this done? I've got, you know, a candidate that I want to be able to show it to. So we communicate pretty freely. You know, we try to be as open as we can in communication, for sure.
And so, Jamie, how are you really budgeting on the technology side? You're a startup. You know you need some technology. You're looking out. You know, you're communicating with franchisees saying you're going to need this much technology. You know, how are you projecting all that into the future, the next 12, 18 months, your technology spend?
Well, I think as we were talking earlier, you know, business comes first on that type of stuff. We're going to add it on as we need it. One thing I will say is that, you know, FRM has a very, very, very cost efficient platform. And so it's not really using a lot of our resources capital wise. And it's, the cost benefit is, you know, super high on the benefit side. They've, like you said, able to, you know, not only the software, but the teaching and coaching that we receive from them. I think that we have really, you know, made a good decision with them for that exact reason. We don't have to, you know, since you can add modules on when you need them, it's, you know, you're going to have an income attached to an expenditure. As soon as you bring on that client, they're, you know, writing you your franchise fee, and that is when we will implement the necessary pieces.
Well, I think when you need a bigger phone system, I think Rolf can hook you up.
Absolutely.
There. He's got you covered there.
Yeah.
So, Brad, let's talk about maybe a bigger engagement. So you got a client that maybe has 100 or 200 units. You know, how do you all approach those projects differently?
Really, it's just, you know, we take our time a little bit more with that because you've got to really understand you know, usually with a brand that big, they're using some kind of piece of technology already. You got to understand why they think they need to move to something else, what they didn't like about, you know, what they're currently using. And then, you know, put them at ease about making that transition. That's really the hardest thing to do because, like I said before, everybody, especially the larger brands, get really, really freaked out when you talk about change and moving lots of data. And we've been doing it this way for 5 years. And, you know,
they like those spreadsheets they have, right?
They like their spreadsheets. And what am I going to do without my spreadsheet on piece of paper?
Column C is yellow and it needs to stay yellow.
Yeah, exactly. we have clients like that, you know, and if they really, you know, if that's how their upper management wants to see reports, we do that for them. We can create that for them electronically, and it looks exactly like the piece of paper that that they print out every week. So, you know, but really, there's not a whole lot of difference. You know, we have a process that we follow because it works, and we take, no matter what size you are, it's really the same process. I think we, you know, just being a larger brand, maybe you move a little bit slower because there's a usually a lot more data involved and a lot more moving parts at that point. So.
Well, and so at that point, you're probably dealing with a couple different stakeholders on the client side, you know, somebody on the business development side, that's one contact, somebody on the operations side that's supporting the franchisees in the field, that's a different person. So how do you all coordinate project management across multiple stakeholders?
It starts out, you know, right from that kickoff call. When we have the kickoff call, we identify the project manager on their side for each module that they're going to employ. So, you know, that's the main thing is who's my contact for development? Who's my contact for, or who's my go-to person for a store opener? You know, and you just go down the list. Once we identify that, then we break it down into pieces. Okay, here's what we're going to do first. This is why we do it first. And there's a whole checklist that we go through. So there's really a method to the madness. And really, we figured it out by trial and error, right? So we've done this quite a few times, and we think we've got it dialed in pretty good. And our clients seem to get the most out of their implementations by doing it this way.
And so how do you manage the infamous feature requests? You know, I've got to have this feature, or when's it coming? You know, how do you all manage the request process? How do you manage your rollout of upgrades and supporting the training on upgrades?
Yeah, well, the cool thing about that is, you know, we're Microsoft Dynamics based. A lot of our competitors are not on an open API. They don't have open source code. We roll out any upgrades automatically to our clients. They don't have to pay for it. It comes with the product. The other thing is, we don't have to. Well, what we always do is when we're rolling out a new version, we'll roll it out in stages, right? So we're not just going to throw it out to everybody. We'll have a couple clients that we have really good relationships with that will, you know, we'll contact and say, here's what we're doing. We're getting ready to roll this version out. You're going to be first. Here's what you know to expect. If there needs to be training, if something has changed significantly and they're going to freak out when they're like, it doesn't look like you did yesterday, then we'll have training before we roll it out to them on a demo database.
And what do you see coming in the next year or two in terms of on the CRM side in those areas? Obviously, mobile is big and people being disconnected and working remotely. What are some changes you all have planned over the next year or two?
Well, I tell you, the most exciting thing that we see coming down is artificial intelligence, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah, it's really, really cool where, you know, a lot of brands right now, especially the larger brands that get, you know, hundreds and hundreds of inquiries every single month, they need a way to be able to identify who are going to be my best candidates quickly, because there's no way a development person can reach out to, you know, 300 different people every single month. So what the AI interface will do is it will basically run it through an algorithm, every lead that comes in, determine, you know, based off past results, who's going to be the candidates you need to call first. Right. And that's really big. We've had tons of requests for that, especially from bigger brands. And that's something that we've got coming in the very near future. So we're excited about it.
We just need the NSA to license some of their technology out. It could be right. More powerful. Right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, what do you all get from the clients? You know, you all listen to the clients and hear what they're asking for. What are some of the things the market's asking for in terms of new technology?
That's the biggest that I hear right now. Again, mobile applications, as they're getting bigger and bigger, everybody's coming in browsing the internet from a mobile device more and more. So I think you'll see at some point some kind of mobile app that we'll provide that our clients can use that makes it maybe the interface a little bit more mobile friendly.
Sure. And from a business continuity, Jamie, let's talk about that a little bit. Even with a small business, can't lose any data. Every piece of data is very valuable. Every franchise lead is important. You know, what are some things you all are doing on the business continuity side to make sure you're backing up data and things like that?
Well, it all flows directly into, you know, from our website when they fill out, you know, say a lead, for example, they fill out that application. It flows directly into the FRM system and everything is there. And obviously the whole sales process is built out in there. And like you said earlier, there's a full life cycle to that lead. Whether they, you know, become a franchisee or not, they have modules built to allow, you know, like the store opener. So you go through a full checklist and you're able to, you know, start 4 weeks out or 4 months out, you know, which is where we start our build out, all the way through the day you open. And it's got a checkbox for each one of those items to checking up on your stores and making sure compliance, you know, we have a full list built out of, are your medical supplies stored correctly? Do you have your sharps containers in the right places? And you know, multiple different things they have to check up on, and all of those are built into that system. And it's a monthly checkup, so each one of those, each time they, you know, create a new checkup, it saves it in the software. You can see, you know, throughout history of that area representative, you know, are they, you know, maintaining a or a minus or B?
Sure.
And you really get to see. And what's interesting, I didn't know the artificial intelligence part was coming along, but you integrate that with, you know, seeing how your area representatives are, you know, actually executing on a, you know, monthly basis. You really can, you know, develop the key target person that you want, and being able to see, you know, on a daily basis, who those top people are that you can call. It really allows you to focus more on, you know, the sales side and closing your deals and being able to travel and visit versus, you know, spending all your time in stores and working on trying to hold your people accountable.
Well, thanks. So this has been great information, guys. Really appreciate your time. Brad, if people want to reach you at FRM Solutions, how do they do that?
Yeah, they can get us at FRMSolutions.com. Everything you need to know about us is on our website. Also, a contact form there that we'll reach right out to you and start taking you through the process. And so, yeah, just FRMSolutions.com.
And Jamie, if somebody wants to buy a franchise or get hydrated, how do they reach you?
Yeah, same exact thing, vita-flo.com. And we have a tab on there that has a, you know, short request form that you fill out via, you know, whether you want to contact us or a franchise opportunity. And it flows you right into our system.
All right, well, thanks, guys. Thanks to Rolf and Steven as well. Thanks to listeners for joining in, and we'll talk to you next time.